We have been, all three of us, tied up in another committee meeting right next door until just a couple minutes ago, and were unable to attend as that committee meeting ran over. It's now about 10 minutes to the hour of 2 o'clock. I want to note one thing for the record before we start off today. There is a memorial service being conducted over at the Presbyterian Church for a dear friend of mine, William K. Bill Boardman, who passed away from a heart attack last week. And his wife and many of my, Jeannie Chance, who was a senator, served here in this body, and many of my friends are over there. I had hoped to convene at 1:30, break for purposes of the memorial service, and return. I'm not going to inconvenience the people in this room for my own personal desires to do that. But if you would not mind, I would appreciate very sincerely if we could all just stand silent for a few moments in remembrance of a former Speaker of the House from my district and a man that I was privileged to know and call my friend, who put in a lot of hours of service on behalf of the state of Alaska right in these very halls. And somebody I think we need to remember and follow his example. For your patience in that regard. Appreciate it very much. I have many people here that want to talk on Senate Bill 58, and I'd like to let them have a chance because we had to cancel out once before on that very subject. I have sites online, Anchorage, Kodiak, Matsu, Sitka, and Tok. We also have people prepared to testify. Let me call on first John Schaefer in Sitka on SB 58. What I'll do is I'll alternate and then take one from the room and one from the teleconference and so on. We'll try to get through as many as we can. There's quite a few people in the room. John, are you prepared to testify?
Yes, I am, Senator Taylor. Thank you very much.
Please go right ahead.
This is just a minor point, but one of my hats I wear is that I'm a United Methodist minister, and I helped create Northern Light Church, and it's the United Methodist Church as well as the Presbyterian Church. So
great
information. Don't want to have people thinking it's the wrong denomination. I'd like to speak to Senate Bill 58 from the position with the Alaska, or the American Association of Retired Persons, AARP, and I'm serving on the State Legislative Committee. But I would also like to speak from just my experience in Alaska. I haven't lived here very long compared to many others. Only been here 31 years. And as the state policy has been developed to help encourage senior citizens to remain in the state, I have been here long enough to see that this policy has made a real difference to the quality of life in many of our communities. And I hope that before that state policy is changed by any legislation, there's the opportunity for some hearings to be held throughout the state so that we can get some idea of the impact, not just on the budget this year, but the impact upon the quality of life in coming years if we reverse this state policy or go to the point of not having a state policy on encouraging senior citizens to stay in the state, and we have some idea of what the fiscal impact will be. Someone has started using the term of elder business, and we need to recognize that there are many good economic benefits to this state policy. And while I recognize some adjustments that may have to be made, I'm very excited over the possibility of the annuity program, and many of the senior citizens groups are endorsing the annuity program, not because it will benefit those of us who are already receiving the longevity bonus. No one's suggesting taking it away from those who are already receiving it, but because it will benefit people in the future, and I think will add to the quality of life. We need to be concerned not just about ourselves, but about all generations. The intergenerational benefits of this subsidy be far beyond pure economics. There are also social benefits, and I have seen this in the communities where I've been privileged to live. I hope that you also recognize that if we do encourage seniors to stay in the state through state policy, that it makes a lot of difference to volunteerism and other family groupings and things of this nature. And I remember when I first came to Alaska that many very outstanding people just left the minute they retired. I regretted that. And I really like the way the quality of life has improved in my 31 years here. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify. you're holding hearings in favor of really examining what this bill might do for the future generations of Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you, John, very much. I'm now going to turn to the audience here in Juneau, call on an old friend, Robert Kallenberg. Bob, you want to come up to the microphone, please?
Senators, my name is Robert Christopher Kallenberg. My birth date is May 26, 1903. I arrived in Dillingham the middle of August, 1926. I now reside in Chugiak. I tell you that so that you may better understand some of the things that I have to say. During the 66 plus years that I've called Alaska home, I have seen many changes. When I first came here, we had mail 9 times a year. Now we expect daily delivery, at least 6 days a week, barring holidays. I made my living for years fishing a sailboat in Bristol Bay. I often wonder how we got away with all that work. Well, one of my friends here some years ago said, well, Bob, we were younger. And I guess maybe that's the answer. Now, what I'm driving at is that in the good old days, when people retired, they had no choice except to leave Alaska because their retirement compensation would not meet the cost of living in Alaska. And they left. Now, during the recent years, the state has changed things considerably. As John Schaefer said, many of us consider that the state adopted a policy that permits retired people to remain in the state. And some of the legislation presently being considered erodes that policy. Now then, I told you that I will soon celebrate my 90th birthday. The present bills regarding longevity bonus grandfather me in. I ask you, how much do I have to lose? Not very much. Why am I in this controversy? The answer is that I served on the special committee to solve the problem of the longevity bonus, and back in 1983 and 84, we realized that before the year 2000, funding the program would be a problem. Out of about a year's study, a little short of a year's study, the committee brought in recommendations to the governor and to the legislature that embodied the basic concepts of the annuity approach to solving the problem. The reason that I'm here today and the reason that I am in this controversy is that I have carefully considered all of the solutions that have been offered in the meantime, and I am well aware of the bill that you are considering today. And in my judgment, the annuity approach is the best answer that has been offered to the problem. And I think that this present legislation is rather short-sighted. Now then, you need to consider the age group from 50 to 65. They are deciding whether or not they are going to retire in Alaska. Now, without me offering any leading questions or trying to get information from people, there are numbers of them that tell me that if things go the way they look they're going to have their bags packed and they're going to leave the state when they quit earning money. Now, there are figures available, and I'm sure that you are, that the economic benefit, never mind that I'm a nice guy and a grandfather and all the rest of that stuff, the economic benefit of the retired citizens is a considerable amount, and I'm sure you have the figures available. If you don't, I happen to have them in my pocket. Now then, I would say that you should consider that. Because this, we refer to this as a mailbox industry, the fact that the checks come in the mail, and it is a substantial amount, very close to $600 million a year. It's five seven or something like that. But anyway, I would ask you to consider these things, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Bob. Any questions? Now go to Dillingham to Joe McGill.
This is Joe McGill from Dillingham. I'll go back in the history. I was one of the co-sponsors of the original bill for $200 a month. At the present time, I'm representing the Dillingham Senior Center, which I'm one of the directors of. It has 138 members. We're not in favor of Senate Bill number 58. I'll just make my testimony short. Some of the reasons is that a lot of senior citizens, once they do reach 65, they still have a lot to the government, they can, to the local communities, fishing organizations, just like myself. Involved with the fishing. I have been mayor even after I reached 65, and I could afford to do it because of my retirement. And I think that this money has been a good investment for the state, because I always hear talk of people coming up, bringing their relations up here so they get the $250 a month, because one thing we don't figure, the most of them have some type of other retirement, like Social Security or something like that, that actually compensates for it by bringing money into the state. And the good part of the people that do get the $250 a month, now they've got some Social Security or other income, and there's a good chance they would be leaving the state if they didn't get the $250. And that, or the others that couldn't, they'd wind up in a pioneer's home or be considerable more expense for the state to take care of them than giving them $250 a month and leaving them run loose. These people now that's reached the age I have now, there's a lot of them like me. They come up here at the end of World War II. This Navy wasn't born here, where the group was homesteaded and fished and everything, and lived Alaska way, and we don't have a lot of retirement. Some of them don't have hardly any. I don't think the state can afford to run that group of people out here. Thank you. And I could talk all day, but I want to make it short.
Representing McGill, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to come forward today. We certainly appreciate both your past efforts here in Juneau and also the fact that you're still staying actively involved and take the time to come out today. That's very kind of you. Let me now move back to Juneau and to the audience here. Rupe Andrews.
Mr. Chairman, do we have a lot of people on teleconference? Because I
don't.
There.
I have.
I would pass over in favor of.
I have one more person in Kodiak, two in at the Tok LIO, and that's it. So I'm in on the teleconference.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rupe Andrews, and I'm with the Capital City Task Force of the AARP. Whoops. I'll make it very brief because I know there's other people to testify. Some of the comments I were going to make were already made, but I would mention this, that on the 8th of April, the governor is convening a meeting, and I believe it's going to be some dozen people that represents organizations and or agencies that have to do with senior citizens in the state. The governor is aware that passage of this legislation would eliminate a standing policy of some 20 years that has created economic stability for seniors allowing them to remain in their own homes and also to make the choice to remain in Alaska. And I think out of that April 8th meeting, there may be some framework or infrastructure of some policy to replace the policy that this legislation would change. And my suggestion and recommendation today to the committee is that perhaps you might want to postpone any activity except for taking testimony on this until the result of that meeting becomes available. And that is the basis of my comments today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Andrews. The Commissioner of Administration is here, and I'd like to call on her at this time to come forward and testify on the bill. And then we'll go to Kodiak, then out to Tok, and that should wrap up our teleconference. I only had one other person to testify signed up here in Juneau. That's Bob Berryhill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Just for the record, I'm Nancy Usero. I'm Commissioner of Administration. And I would like to have on the record what the provisions of this bill are. And then I'd like to talk a little bit about how we develop those provisions. First of all, this bill is very simple. It grandfathers in all current recipients of the program, which provides for the current generations of seniors. It provides a three-year stepped-down phase-out at the rate of $200, $150, and $100 a year for seniors who are 64, 63, and 62, respectively, which would receive those payments for life, and then the program ends. This would accommodate for those people who had a reasonable expectation and may very well have planned their retirement around receiving the longevity bonus program, or longevity bonus. I've been real interested in listening to the comments with regard to the public policy that this represents. I have a fairly good memory of last year's budget process and remember very vividly sitting before the finance committees while people discussed a myriad of ways to do away with the longevity bonus. Most of them, if you'll walk back in time with me, we had a $200 million problem. The price of oil had dropped. People were frantically trying to balance the budget, and I can tell you that one of the very first programs that people started looking to was longevity bonus. And the provisions that were being entertained at the time were capping the bonus, which means taking pieces away from everybody who's receiving it, or reducing the benefit for everyone, or secondly, making it a needs-based program. These were not public policy statements as much as they were crisis management approach to having to deal with a financial problem. We all know that the longevity bonus program will grow to $100 million a year. It is a non-needs-based program. It was never designed to be a needs-based program. Of course, it was also not designed to be the program that it is today, because it was by the ruling of the courts in 1982 that made the program as we had designed it originally unconstitutional. So consequently, each year that we have a financial problem in this state, this program becomes vulnerable. The governor was very concerned that the current recipients and the current seniors who are protected under this program would be affected by some sort of a last-minute crisis management approach to balancing the state's budget. There have been a variety of proposals to deal with this program in the legislature for the past 7 years. For whatever reason, there has not been the collective will to fix it. The governor believed, and I concur with him on this, that if we step up to this now, we have a window of opportunity for the next 3 or 4 years that we can fully fund this program and provide an adequate and reasonable transition for the people who are currently receiving this bonus. We think that that is the overriding public policy here, is to protect the current recipients. Anything short of that is going to be a considerable problem for these same people. With regard to the annuity, and I know that this is a program that people have latched onto, and I know that there are a lot of people who have been involved in developing the annuity proposal, and I can tell you that as a practical matter, it sounds very attractive. However, there are a couple of administrative or management fatal flaws to this proposal. One is that if it is an incredibly successful program, it has a significant impact on the economic base because it would remove from the local economies, from the local financial institutions, from the local brokerage houses, from the local restaurants and movie theaters, a significant portion of the permanent fund dividends that are currently being circulated in our local economies. Because the premise of the annuity program is that one deposits their permanent fund dividend into a government-operated and invested account. Those dividends would be invested most likely along the same principles that revenue and the permanent fund invest their funds, which is in equities and U.S. government security bonds outside the state of Alaska. So if this program is successful, it would have a significant economic impact on our local economies. If it is not successful, if it serves merely a handful of people who have the financial wherewithal to be able to invest their dividends into this program, and I would suggest that not everybody is in that position because they use their dividend for the cost of daily living. But let's assume that we have some people who are going to invest in this program who can afford to do so, and it's not extremely successful. We are going to have the state, under the terms and conditions of the annuity proposal that is before the legislature this year, we are going to be taking care of long-term annuity accounts for a handful of people. There is no residency requirement associated with it. The actuarial life of these programs is 41 years. We could end up with the state subsidizing and managing an annuity program for 41 years for a dozen residents of the state of Florida. I mean, I have real concerns about that. I think that also, in terms of the long-term financial planning, there is absolutely no question that we think people should be provided with sound investment opportunities. That's what financial institutions are for, IRAs are for, investment houses are for, annuity programs through insurance companies are for. We think that those investment vehicles are currently available. And finally, I just might add, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, that we concur strongly with most of the seniors who have testified with regard to these programs. We think longevity bonus has been extremely successful. We think it's a program that does provide support and incentive for seniors to stay in the state of Alaska and come to the state of Alaska. The question is, though, how long can we sustain a program within the context of our overall general fund allocations for this purpose. If we could fashion, and I would say to you that we have solicited from most of the organized seniors groups, associations, suggestions for what the alternatives are to this program. For 2 years that I've personally been involved with this program, we have repeatedly asked for suggestions on how to accommodate this. And we have concerns that I'm not sure that we have found a solution to fulfill this purpose and at the same time meet all of the other considerations that we have. So in conclusion, this bill was designed specifically to speak to public policy, and that is that our primary concern is to protect the people who are in the program now, to accommodate those people who have reasonable expectations of the program, and to then be able to have resources available in the next 4 years and beyond that would be available for allocation for maintaining other programs, many of which might very well go to the senior community to support them from a stronger foundation. And I'd be happy to answer questions.
Senator Little.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for coming, Commissioner Lucero. I appreciate your input. I was just, I had a concern about whether or not this bill that's been put forward is defensible constitutionally. As I understand it, the three-year phase-out will work such that an individual who is currently on the system will keep getting the $250 a month, and an individual who's just about to go on the system will get, is it 200,
right.
200, then 150, and 100. Is that defensible?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Little, we do have an opinion from the Attorney General's office in that regard. There's been some discussion about this, and I'm not clear where the concern came from, but in response to those concerns, we have sought and received an opinion from the AG's office addressing that. My understanding is, in summary for you, is that because this is the end of a program, some of the provisions for grandfathering in are more flexible than if it were going to be the continuation of the program under different standards. So the fact is that this is a phase out of a program. It is a way to meet the public good and the public purpose and the legislative intent. And in fact, the program will end as a result. And I believe that that opinion is in your packet.
Maybe we should have started ending the program when we started it, and then we could have done what we originally set out to do.
Senator, the irony of this, of course, is that that's exactly what the original program was.
Right.
Was a self-ending program back in 1973.
Thank you.
Senator Helfer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the you know, regardless of what we're told by attorneys, it just hits me very hard that we would create a program that tells a lifelong Alaskan who's 65 after January 1st, 1997, that they get nothing, and tell someone that they can move here from California 3 years from now and be a couple of years older and get thousands and thousands of dollars from the state treasury. That's why, I mean, this is a stair-stepping program with, maybe this would be stair-cliffing, because the House stair-stepping program took 15 years, this takes 4. But it was, the reason that this approach wasn't approved by the Senate when the annuity was created was because of that inequity. And constitutional or unconstitutional, the inequity, I think, is very clear and very easy to see. And that's very difficult for me.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Helfer, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that it's the frustration that we all share that this was a program originally in 73 that was designed for lifelong Alaskans, for people who had lived here. And in 1983, when that changed because of the constitutional challenge, it became a different program. Regrettably, the solutions that had been offered at that time or during those years were not accepted. Had the annuity program been adopted, which the governor supported in 1986, and I can say I personally supported in 1986, had the program been adopted that now, we'd be 7 years into it, and we wouldn't be having this discussion, and it wouldn't be an issue. But for whatever reason, that didn't happen. I can tell you that we would certainly be amenable to alternative suggestions on the phase-out approach. But the fact remains that we have, as a matter of fact, we looked into this at one time. If we looked at the number of Alaskans who are left and that would have satisfied the criteria under the original program, which was 25 years of residency and here before statehood, we still have a huge number of Alaskans that would qualify under that program. Unfortunately, what we do not have is any way constitutionally under the U.S. Constitution to focus a program or deliver a program specifically to them. At least no one has been able to discover the mechanism or the means of doing that. I can assure you that if somebody were to come up with an approach to do that, we would grab at it and do it tomorrow. But we don't know what... Every idea that we have ever heard or been able to imagine hasn't been able to be upheld.
Mr. Chairman, I hope you'll give us a little bit of latitude to at least discuss the annuity as the alternative.
Certainly.
To this. Although we don't have the bill before us in this committee. You know, the annuity essentially created a system that replaced the longevity bonus over a period of 15 or 16 years. There are ways, I believe, that would accelerate that phase out and that might, in fact, still result in substantial reduction. For example, if each annuity share were matched by the state, and if you assume that 20% of the people eligible in the 60 to 65 year bracket chose to participate in the annuity, if in fact everyone's share were matched by a state contribution, and round, if they contributed a $1,000 dividend and the state matched that $1,000 dividend, it would, in fact, make the annuity steps twice as big. The annuity would phase out the longevity bonus in 7 years instead of 15 years. And because only 20% of the individuals were actually participating who were eligible, you would still have substantially less cost in funding it. Of course, it depends on a lot of projections that we don't know who's going to adopt the annuity. But I just wonder if you could respond to that kind of approach.
Certainly, happy to, Mr. Jameson. I guess I would just correct one thing for the record, and that is that the annuity proposal does not replace longevity bonus as much as it is a trade-off for permanent funds, for permanent fund dividends. That it only comes in to reduce the longevity bonus if someone is giving up their permanent fund dividend and investing it 100% every year for at least 15 years in order to derive that. So that's just a clarification for the record. Senator, I can tell you that any proposal that could be brought up that could have an annuity program that makes sense, that does accommodate some of these changes, we'd be more than happy to discuss. I have the annuity proposal that has been introduced this session, I have substantive concerns with as a fiduciary. You know, I mean, it just simply doesn't foot, as they say in the accounting field. I mean, it doesn't, the provisions of that bill don't work. If we could find one, and I, again, have the memory of last session sitting before particularly House Finance Committee for days on end, talking about, well, how about if we front load it, and how about, you know, trying to take this annuity proposal and find ways to make it financially work. We supported those discussions and we would continue to do that. The reason the governor's bill does not have an annuity proposal feature associated with it is that we believe the first priority at this point is to reduce the flow into the program. Keep in mind that it's not just a $5 million new liability to the state every year, but that new class, if you will, of recipient compounds into $150 million over the life of the program. So for every year that goes on, we have another $150 million liability associated with grandfathering that group in. So the reason the governor's proposal does not have an annuity provision is we simply have not found one that we can get enough concurrence on to be able to say this is the fix, this is the solution. You know, maybe we weren't smart enough to find out what it was, but we feel that the priority is to grandfather in the current recipients, provide a phase-in period, and we would be more than happy on this interim basis of the next 2 or 3 or 4 years of working with the legislature and the senior community and trying to fashion some sort of an annuity program that everybody can get behind and support. But what's happened, of course, is because we haven't been able to agree on the terms and conditions of this annuity program for 7 years, nothing has been done, and this program has continued to grow to the point that it has become financially not viable. So, I mean, the short story, in summary, we would be happy to entertain any proposal that people would have with regard to the construct of an annuity program that makes financial sense.
Let me suggest to you, Commissioner Ysera, that there were suggestions made on how to solve this entire problem up front. But the people who were here at the time didn't want to hear them, because the initial permanent dividend fund program also was mortally flawed. Flawed to the extent that it was based also upon residency, and a fellow named Zobel came along. And all of a sudden we found out all you had to be was a resident for 1 year, and you instantly qualified. Many of us had suggested to the administration and the Attorney General at the time that there was a very simple way to avoid that fatal constitutional flaw, and we were disregarded. The suggestion was that instead of granting a lump sum amount to each citizen because they breathe the air, that maybe we ought to go back and take a look at those citizens who under penalty of law had paid income taxes for all of their working lives in Alaska and during the territorial days. And since we had those records here in Juneau, we could have gone back through, we could have very quickly calculated how much money they paid to build the schools and the roads and the rest of the assets of this state. We could have then compounded and added a decent rate of interest onto it, and each of those individuals would have had an account by which we could have returned to them the money that we took away from them by operation of law. It could not possibly be challenged on residency grounds. It could not possibly be challenged on equal protection grounds because it's that person's money we had taken away from them. We were only returning it because we didn't need it anymore. We had lots of money from oil at the time. Would have worked fine. What wouldn't it have done? It wouldn't have paid a permanent dividend check to people that sat on welfare for that entire period of time, for whom we paid all of their food, all of their lodging, all of their medical. And now, because that had been paid for by the taxpayers, the ones who were producing, now we should also continue to pay them because they were still breathing the air and we were still paying for them. And that, of course, was not acceptable to the administration at the time, who wanted to have, I believe, a constituency base that included all the people of the state, not just those who had earned a living here and supported their fellow citizens here. So there was a very simple solution. I think there still is a very simple solution. If you really wish to talk about that group of Alaskans who really built this state, we could still go back and find those records. We could still create that fund, and we could be paying the people who were here before statehood and the people who had 15, 20 years residency and paid taxes up until 1978, we could still do that. It's a whole lot different deal than anybody else has suggested, but you know what? You don't pay the last turnip that fell off the truck from Albuquerque that way. And I don't end up going down through my district and finding senior housing programs where 50%+ of some of the people living there have not lived in this state more than 3 years. The seniors that I talk to feel about the same way I do about that. They're kind of tired of seeing the new guy come into town because his kids happen to work up here, and he wants to come in and get a post office box for 1 year, and then he shows up a year later. So, you know, it's real nice to have him here and have him around the grandkids, but economically, it's a great advantage to the state. Bring them in. I don't argue with Millie when she tells me that it's a big chunk of money. It's a retirement community sort of a thing. And maybe the economics of that alone should drive it. But if that's going to be the case, maybe we need to look at those economics a little closer to see whether or not the community and the state gets as much benefit out as it's paying for. Some would argue, I think, that you get more. But I did want to just say that there were some of us who told folks that there was a simple way to do it at the time. That probably will stimulate calls from all over the state. At least there was a different idea on the agenda. Let me move on to, you have no further questions. Let me move on to the rest of the sites. First, let's go to Evelyn Mortimer in Kodiak. Ms. Mortimer?
This is Evelyn Mortimer. I'm president of the Senior Center Board. I represent approximately 180 seniors. Now, I have not talked to all of them, but those that I have talked to feel that House Bill 58 is fair, and as much as it does not put the current recipients in jeopardy and gradually phases out the longevity bonus, which I think is the purpose of this bill, that we go back to the original intention of the longevity bonus. We have not discussed the annuity, and we are not familiar with many of the things that you brought up today, but we do think House Bill 58 is a fair bill. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much for that brief comment. Appreciate it. I should reflect for the record that Senator Donnelly is online and at the LIO in Anchorage. Is that correct, Senator Donnelly?
It is, Mr. Chairman.
I hope you'll wish your dad happy birthday for us.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Did you have any comments or questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was listening to the testimony from around the state. Of course, I do not support this legislation at this time. And I don't know what the chair's intent, whether we're going to have a vote on it or not today.
We don't have a quorum at this time, Mr. Donnelly, and unfortunately, I can't let you vote out of Anchorage. Okay, well, thank you for chiming in. And if you want to ask a question or anything, just override us here and jump on in. We'll let you in on it. Let's move now to Tolk, to Ms. Millie Twillinger.
Robin, count your blessings. You were moaning there about have a job and have a bunch of kids, and, you know, they're mooching off that people count your blessings.
I do every day, Millie. Thank you.
Senate Bill 6 is the one that I support. The state of Alaska has voted on it. It met all legal and ethical standards passed the state. It's not discriminatory. It's voluntary. It's constitutional. It's Alaskan traditional. When I lived in Rampart 50 years ago, the old timers got $20 a month. And there was no stigma. They didn't have to do a write-up. And one man was blind. He got 40. It's an Alaskan tradition to take care of the old-timers. My mother was in Washington State. She got an old-timer's pension. It's just a thing that we believe in and we do. And I was fizzing around here with a pencil the other day when I was listening to somebody, and verse 92, line 83, if we had gone into the pioneer's home, we would have put 45 years in there. Instead, we stayed home. The longevity bonus helps us to stay at home. We're grandfathered and grandmothered in anyway. But at the present rate, it would have cost the state $1,800,000 to be in the pioneer's home. This longevity bonus keeps us at home, better for you, better for us. Thank you.
Millie, thank you very much. Now move to Anchorage for Jerry McCutcheon. If you could keep it short, Jerry, I'd like to only go another 10 minutes or so on this and then get on to another bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't come here for this purpose, but I happen to be here picking up some other stuff. Listen to this thing and somebody say there's no simple way. I believe it was you, Mr. Chairman, who went on with an epistle. And I'd have to say amen to that. I agree. I think we can still do, maybe I'm terribly wrong, a paper division. When Boucher went out and went through about the sorry subject, nothing but seemed to come covered by that. And I think you can do a paper division, divide it up amongst those who are here, new material that's added from the permanent fund. You can then divide that amongst all who are there then. That means that the new people only get a very small amount, and those who are here today get a very large amount because they've already got the division. And just keep the paper division. It doesn't have to be an active division. We pass it out, the permanent fund where this thing originates, and then you've got your problem taken care of, and then it isn't worth it for the military to climb on board. It isn't worth it for a newcomer to come in and jump on board. I think that'd take care of your problem. I don't know. Somebody is saying you can't do a paper division, but I think you might. I'd like to see the written brief that says that you can't do a paper division and make it stick. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Appreciate that. We have one last person to testify, and that is Ms. Alice Oates in Tok.
Hey, what happened to Matt too?
Hello, this is Alice Oates, Post Office Box 488 Tok, Alaska.
Hello, Matt Sue.
And I agree that we should keep the longevity bonus that was given to us for us to stay here, and most of us have done just that. And I think we could get more revenue by taking and taxing tobacco and liquor. And I'm all for That's all.
Well, thank you very much. I thought I heard Rose Palmquist on there. Rose, Matt Sue hadn't
yes,
sent...
Yes, you sure did. And I thought Matt Sue was going to get a whack at this.
Well, Rose, Matt Sue hadn't sent anything down to tell us there was anybody online in Matt Sue. So I'm glad you entered in. Make it as brief as you can, Rose, but go right ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm going to really refer to previous testimony that I agree with and have material on. The fact that the organization of seniors made a survey, and over the years have been improving that survey, which came out a year ago. The legislators were offering copies of this. It's what seniors contribute to the economy of the state. And it clearly showed that by the time you counted up all this is my this. The state gets more from its seniors than it does from tourism, and more than the state itself gets. Fishing there is very lucrative, but not too lucrative for the state. So the second one is the demographic mix, which nobody touched on. But Alaska needs is a better mix of youth and age, not a greater preponderance of youth and as few elderly as you can afford to leave. Alaska has less than one half and even less than one third of the others in the population as the other states of the United States. And I'm telling you that, as the Minister Ruger said, we are very easy on the cost of the state and the local government. We deter crime in the youth, we have very little coming straight south. We don't provide you with lots of children, which are very costly to educate. And I could go on, I'll leave it at that. Legislature to establish a policy by law was the 1971 legislature. As the man from Sitka said, it does state that the reason for it is to encourage people to remain in the state. And you know about the 1986 state plebiscite, which clearly supported as the big majority of the annuity plan, which the legislature has supported, but not enough to put it across. Can the state afford the annuity plan? Yes, it can. And the recent survey done with the help of the Republican Party, I might say, states that the various pockets of money that may not be immediately available, but some of it is, showed that without counting the earnings from those pockets, nor counting income stamps, which is still not resolved, not counting any fund balances of the various departments, there is easily available more than $5.25 billion. The other, and incidentally, only Ron Larson has really opposed that to any extent that I have heard. I was very interested in the repeat of a statement which has been denied by other members of the government. So it's very disturbing to hear one person in the government state that the governor's bill would guarantee the longevity bonus to those now receiving it for life. We know, and you know, that I'm too new in the government, you know that no legislature could commit to a succeeding legislature. So if you want to cut the next legislature can cut, the next one can also. There is no guarantees to us older people, and it's a shame and a crime to tell us that we don't have to worry about this bill because we're going to get it for life. I was very interested in Senator Halford's remarks. And of course, I want to say hello to Joe McGill. Senator Halford, I think, made some very sound and sensible proposals. And if the administration really wants to compromise on this, and they think that the 15 years is too long, the senator did suggest how it could be reduced, and you now have the monies, if you don't spend it all in one place, with the $680 million that you just recently got in back taxes payments, to carry it out. As to the meeting with the governor on the 8th, I certainly would like to know what the agenda is for that, so that if we're going to spend our money with expensive airline tickets, we want to make sure that we're going to get something out of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rose. I appreciate that. That's all the testimony that I had down. All the people that testify. Bob, did you wish to testify? You just had observed right here. Okay, I wanted also to know Bob Berrio was here in Juneau. I have only myself left in the room at this place. My committee members seem to wander in and out. I'm hoping that we will get them back a sufficient quorum so that we can act one way or another on this legislation today. If not, it will continue to just be on the calendar in the future. I believe the final decisions on this matter will probably be made in finance and certainly not here. But I did want to state for the record, as I have not before, that I was one of the original co-sponsors on the only annuity bill that passed. I sponsored it in the House. It was sponsored by Senator Ray over here on the Senate side. It passed. It was vetoed by Governor Cooper. I still strongly believe in that concept and would like to see it work, although the support for that concept seems to be waning around these halls from what we have had in the past. With that, I'll terminate the hearing on 58.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Dave Donnelly in Anchorage.
Yes.
I just want to say I really agree with you on that. I always supported the annuity proposal since people voted in favor of it. I think that was 86.
That's correct.
Election, and I was really sorry that Governor Cooper vetoed it because I had hoped it could be saving us money now and be in place and working. And I very much agree with your statement. I want to work towards that again.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Donnelly, and I just wanted to say thank you also for participating. I really appreciate that, and I know you've got some other business you're up there working on, and I just really appreciate you being here with us today. Thank you very much. The next item I was going to take up at this time was committee substitute for Senate Bill number 44. There's some amendments pending. As soon as we're done with that, we're going to take up Senator Phillips's bill on work camps for juveniles. Yes. Is Dennis Mestis online in Anchorage?
No, he's not. Mr. Chairman, he's not here.
Okay.
I think I'm supposed to replace him.
Okay. I see Rick Friedman here, and he has indicated he's supposed to replace him, apparently. So my frustration is I don't have anybody in the room to vote on amendments.
Well, so they all fit.
And I've got amendments here in front of me. Yeah, but the problem is, if I bring the bill up, it fails too. Maybe while we're awaiting the return of the committee, Mr. Senator Phillips, would you like to give testimony on your work camp bill? Get that on the record. We can at least get that portion out of the way while we're awaiting the return of a quorum so we can vote on these matters.
Yeah.
51. 51, I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Phillips, go right ahead.
First of all, are we on teleconference?
Yes, we are.
We are.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Randy Phillips, representing Senate District L. Before you, you have Senate Bill 51, an act related to establishing work camps for juveniles. And basically, this is the same piece of legislation that then-Senator Virginia Collins had introduced. I, in turn, talked to her and agreed to reintroduce that piece of legislation, which we obviously have done. The work camp bill is a residential facility set aside for the use by minors, those individuals placed in such alternative facilities may require labor on buildings and grounds or perform other activities, including education. What Senate Bill 51 does is authorize, this is the kingpin of the bill, main piece, authorizes Department of Health and Social Services to establish regulations for the operation of work camps, or commonly called boot camps, and to place the link of minors into the work camps instead of another type of facility. The bill further provides that a city or a nonprofit organization may maintain and operate a juvenile work camp under regulations to be adopted by the department. Work camp juveniles can be have been used successfully in other states such as Nevada. You have the backup information there. Mr. Chairman, basically, that's what it does in a nutshell. I have someone here from the department to give you more details if you should desire.
Thank you.
This is you.
Give us your name, please.
I'm Pat O'Brien from the Department of Health and Social Services, and I'm actually filling in for Randall Hines today, who usually testifies on this bill. The department last year remained supportive of this bill, SB 366, which was introduced last year, and then SB 51, which was reintroduced this year. We remain supportive of the concept. What it does is gives us an additional alternative type of program in which to place juveniles who are adjudicated delinquent. We would, of course, need to explore it and establish regulations before we could do that. I don't have a lot of detail to add except that we continue to support this concept. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
I really don't, but maybe, I shouldn't say that, I do. Is this similar to what has been known in some of the lower 48 states as like an outward bound program or a program of that type where the young people actually get a chance to get out and experience life maybe on a farm or life out in the woods or camping or something like that?
That certainly is a possible component. We actually have programs like that existing in the state of Alaska today as a component of residential child care facilities. I see no reason why that could not be a component, but as I read the definition, one of the main emphases on this bill is the ability to have youth work on a site and learn something about the work world. For instance, it might be a farm and they could raise potatoes, whatever. They could raise whatever you might raise on that farm, work with animals, and learn something about the work ethic and feel good about themselves because they were able to do that.
Back at the turn of the century, they used the shorter, younger ones in coal mines. They could fit back in the premises.
Senator Taylor, I would respectfully say that's why we've been given authority to write the regulation.
Good. Well, I appreciate that, and I have a lot of confidence in the department's ability to keep us from erring in our ways of doing business here. I appreciate that very much. Please forgive me, the committee. I had anticipated they would last longer, but we may have kind of worn them down. I'm hoping upon return, Mr. Phillips, I intend to ask the committee move the bill. I don't know of any objections to the bill within the committee, and you still have quite a journey left ahead of you through finance to accomplish this. So with that, I think we'll just stand at ease and await the return of a quorum, because the amendments currently pending before 44 cannot be acted on, nor can the bill be acted upon until we have one. So we'll stand in adjournment for a few moments.
We'll
bring the committee back to order again. We don't have our quorum here, but we do have an additional witness here ready to testify on Senate Bill 51.
And we are on teleconference?
Yes, we are.
For the record, my name is Sherry Ball, and I'm representing the Alaska Women's Lobby and KidCat regarding House Bill 51.
I'm still trying to get Rick and Suzanne in here. I had them for a while. I keep losing them.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Which would establish work camps for juveniles. And our concerns on this piece of legislation, which we have expressed in previous committees, has to do with the fact that there are residential child care programs now. We feel that the piece of legislation is very broad and not very clear as to whether people will be sent to these work camps from places like McLaughlin or from less restrictive settings like residential facilities. And we feel that the residential facilities that we have in place already have the ability to establish work components. And we do have concerns about going forward with this kind of an idea to establish work camps for juveniles, although we are supportive of the governor's plan and the House bill to establish these boot camps for first-time offenders who are between 18 and 26 years old. We feel that the established facilities that we have in place are really sufficient to deal with youth, and at least until we understand whether people would be moving down the continuum into work camps or up the continuum. And it appears that they have the same Point McKenzie Farm in mind for both the boot camp bill for the older nonviolent offenders and for the juveniles, and we would prefer to see those Point McKenzie Farms used for an experiment in seeing if we can lessen our prison population. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have any questions. I appreciate your testimony. Did you have any amendments you wish to offer?
I don't have specific amendments that I wish to offer. I feel that by just adding the words work camps, it doesn't give us much comfort into knowing exactly what is in mind, what would be involved. We feel that both for juveniles and for those first-time offenders, in the literature that I have read that has been passed out by the sponsor, they talk about how important drug treatment, education, and other things are to people in if we want to see these boot camps be effective. And also, it seems that the boot camps that have been established for first-time offenders, the idea there is to have a more intensive kind of treatment for someone who would otherwise be serving a longer period of time in jail. And then in the number of cases where they can record it, they don't find that the recidivism rate is really impacted greatly, but they do find that people return basically on violations of like their parole and things like that rather than for another crime. So we do support the boot camp or work camp idea for the first time adult youthful offender, but not for juveniles. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Another pause?
Yes, I'm sorry. We'll pause for a while. Are you still up there, David? I'm still trying to get a third one in here to work on this this ski bill.
Yeah, here, Mr. Chairman. Got to run another time here, too.
You're not alone. I've got about another 15 minutes before I've got to run. Thank you much for hanging in. We'll give her another 5 or 10 minutes here, see what happens.